When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Mastering your emotions so you can be a safe space for the feminine is actually, to me, the art of masculinity.
So I would think it means two things to me. One, it's always like in the eye of the beholder. So realize that it's okay to have a different view than somebody else. Two, it's always being created and recreated.
I think it means an openness to growth, an openness to learning, an openness to looking at what is masculinity to me and having curiosity about what parts are serving me and what parts maybe aren't serving me so well anymore.
And so the art of masculinity is truly that. If you can master being a lion and a lamb, you've mastered masculinity.
The art of masculinity to me means knowing how to gracefully dance between both the feminine flow and the structure of the masculine.
This is The Art of Masculinity with your host, Johnny L. Sasser.
Hey everyone, today's guest is Philip Folsom. He is an anthropologist, culture development expert, and president and CEO of Wolf Tribe. In addition, he is the co-founder of Valor, a PTS and resiliency program for warriors and first responders. Philip is known for his unique adventure programming and tribe workshop that focuses on the primary culture components of building healthy and high-performance teams. Philip Folsom's reputation in the team development world is legendary. His in-person events, seminars, and experience have dramatically improved the lives of over 500,000 people, teaching the importance of peace, power, and sacred purpose. Philip is a regular contributor at the USC Marshall School of Business and sits on the High Performance Board of Red Bull. His work is regularly featured on television and podcasts around the world. Philip's current clients include Microsoft, Apple, Snapchat, SpaceX, and Riot Games. I mean, the list goes on. And with Philip, he is also one of the OGs in the men's movement, acknowledging the fact that the early movement for men was not done very well and kind of left a lot of guys out there hanging. We dive into that on this episode. So get ready to sit back and buckle up, because Philip's got a ton of knowledge he's just dropping on us, from an anthropological standpoint to history lessons to all kinds of stuff. I really, really enjoy this. Philip is a special human, definitely somebody who is an immense mentor and leader in the men's development space, but also in just cultural development and how he goes about helping leaders and businesses develop continuity and cohesiveness. So enjoy the episode, guys, and I'll see you guys around the corner. All right, everyone, welcome back to The Art of Masculinity. Today, we have one of the OGs in the men's space and just probably one of the most epic men I've had the fortune of meeting recently, Philip Folsom. How you doing, brother?
So good.
Good. I love it, man. I love it. An anthropologist by trade, which is exciting to talk to you on this show, because I don't think we've had one yet. And you've been around the masculinity game for
quite a while. And you saw, you and I had the fortunate conversation of talking about some of the early men's movement stuff on your show, which I'm super excited to dive into some of that stuff today. But before we kick off, nobody escapes the manly round, brother. You ready to dive into a little bit of the manly round?
Dude, what do we have to, what are we doing? Eating testicles or something? What the fuck, bro?
Well, we're not a liver king, bro. Dude,
we can only dream.
That guy's liver wild, king. Man.
But dude, I have been eating some liver before working out. I found that if I freeze it fucking like a solid block and then cut little cubes, and then I eat a little cube of frozen liver with a little bit of protein bar, I can choke it down.
I love how you say I can choke it down.
Did I? Yeah. Because I tried it raw and I'm not man enough to do it.
Bro, I watched that dude and I'm like, I'm sure you can too. You're a hunter. Like you can like imagine yourself being like, I could push through it. But that dude just freaking eats it like nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I get it. Like, you know, hey, I could, you know, like, okay, we're out hunting, and, you know, and you grab the warm heart and you take a bite. Like, dude, I could make that happen. But you pull out a cold, slippery fucking little thing of liver, like, all right, here we go. And I could do it like once, but I don't want to make a lifestyle out of it. It has to be sustainable, which might be a good topic to get into at some point, is sustainable lifestyle for growth. And just for all you dudes who are like considering the Liver King journey or the liver journey, I'm telling you, I had one of the best workouts of my life yesterday. And I go there with my wife, we go down to Gold's Gym, and I was putting fucking plates on the leg. I was like, my wife was looking at me like, is that you don't ever do that many plates. I'm like, I know. I think it's the liver, honey. Okay. What's this wild man round? What's going on? What's the man round?
It's a fun few questions to get the community to know you a little bit in a different way than just your intro. So pretty easy. It's just having some fun with some questions. I call it the manly round to throw guys off, but it's just some fun questions for you.
I love it.
Yeah. All right, brother. Your first question. I think I know the answer to this, but your first question is, what is your spirit animal and why?
Yeah. It's the wolf, right? I have wolves all... Yeah. So, I actually got my first little wolf tattoo when I was 18 in the Army, and I'd never seen a wolf in my life. I mean, it wasn't one of those things that I was ever even going to see. But I had an affinity to that animal. And I think a lot of people do. We could spend a whole podcast episode on the relationship of the wolf to human. It's been our partner for 35,000 years. We are genetically linked to respond to that animal. And we have a whole cascade of similarities that allowed us to partner with it. And it literally transformed the course of humanity. The moment that that wolf started to become our dogs, we went from scavenger to apex predator, and we fucking demolished the world from then on. And so the wolf is huge. It's a lot of people's totem animal, so I'm not claiming that one like, oh, I'm really cool. But the wolf is a cool thing, and I'm getting a little work done.
Oh, he's getting naked. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that's dope.
Yeah, so more to be revealed later.
Oh, I love that. We'll have to have you back on when it's finished.
All right.
Yeah, and you know, it's not that you're even claiming the totem. Most people don't have the experience or knowledge you have of the wolf. Like truly, not only that, but I mean, you have firsthand real experience with actual real wolves. Like it's not even just you talking about it, which very few
on the regular
can even say. So I know. Yeah. If anybody follows Philip, you know this about him, but on the regs, like those are his homeboys. But it's like very few people have that in-depth knowledge. So I loved you actually diving into a little piece of that.
Shout out to Apex Protection Project. It's a big wolf sanctuary, rescues, rehabilitates wolves and wolf dogs here in Southern California. 501c3 nonprofit. And they have an epic social media, TikTok and Instagram. You get to, like, you can see them feeding the wolves, and it's super cool. And they're a clean, legitimate, honor-based organization. ApexProtectionProject.org. Shout out.
Okay. Shout out to that. We'll put that in the show notes too, so everybody can go check that out. All right. Your question, Philip, is what song, whenever you hear it, no matter where you are, there could be a million people standing shoulder to shoulder around you, do you have to bust out singing along to out loud?
You know what? Any Way You Want It. Journey.
Great song.
Yeah, the live version. Fucking epic. And listen, that's not one of those you can, most big dudes can sing with, and I cannot, but yeah, Journey. Well, he has, you know, Journey is, if you don't know Journey, you know, he's got the Freddie Mercury range. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. And it was, I challenge almost anybody to not sing along to some Journey songs.
Like, yeah, dude.
I don't know how you can't. Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Your last question is, if you could, even you can travel in, imagine you can travel in time. So you can pick somebody in the past, or you can pick somebody present, but it's got to be somebody who's pretty well known to most people. If you could find somebody, who would you prank? And if you know the prank, what would it be?
Oh my God. I thought we were going like, who would you learn from? Who would you?
Nope.
Yeah, I was like, I was gonna go, like, I'm going Jesus, like right off the bat, you know, or fucking
I've had
Buddha
people want to prank Jesus.
Prank, damn son. That's God. Who's a stuffy bitch that needs some lightening up? But somebody who's not too scary. Like you're thinking maybe Stalin, but that wouldn't go well.
No.
I don't know. Probably some British general, General Montgomery. You know, he was a little bit of a chode and kind of stuffy and arrogant. And he slowed our ass down, bro. Get out of the way. World War II.
I love it.
Oh, the prank.
I love history.
I don't know.
I love it.
I don't know.
Only if you know it. Only if you know one. That's some people aren't pranksters.
Replace his tea with coffee. Maybe. I don't know, something like that. Oh, you know what I would tell him?
He wouldn't like that.
I would ask him the greatest gift that Britain gave to the world. And then I would tell him that it's fucking America. That's what I would do.
I second that one. That's a really good one. I like that one.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, brother, it's really special to be on the show with you, because there's a lot that we can dive into, and we've already kind of flirted with some of the subjects that would be awesome. But I want to start somewhere where we've never started before on this show, and that's anthropologically with masculinity. Mm. And I wanted to dive into kind of this aspect of how there's, you know, kind of the understanding and research of the sociological effects of masculinity aren't super deep, and they haven't been really researched very long. What are you seeing from the time of kind of the early men's movements that is now translating maybe better with today's men, I would say?
Yeah. Okay. Well, obviously the internet is either a curse, right? And it's going to just send us down the toilet bowl into doom scrolling and porn, or it's going to elevate us to escape velocity, and we're going to achieve a different level of consciousness than we have ever even imagined, because the internet is the way that we access the collective consciousness of our species. Like, you don't need to go to the library and go, Montgomery? What the fuck? Who is that? Like, you know, it's 5 seconds away. General Montgomery. like, bang. And now you understand everything that, you know, you may learn something about British culture and military history and World War II, whoong, like you're elevated at that point. So the internet is, yeah, is bringing a level of understanding to the masculine conversation that has never happened before. And, you know, when I'm growing up, and I grew up in the, you know, 70s and 80s, meditation was one of those things that you went to India, like you took a slow boat to India if you wanted to learn this weird thing called meditation. And then you had to find a guru because they're the only ones that can give you your secret mantra, you know?
Oh.
The Beatles were rich enough to bring their guru to the States in the 60s, yeah, right? That, so, you know, and meditation is one of the seminal tools that was given to men, to the warrior class. Like in the book, the Bhagavad Gita, the god Krishna comes down to the warlord Arjuna and says, I have a mission for you. You have to go rid the world of these savage warriors that are fucking shit up. And Arjuna says, I can't do it. Those are my brothers. And Krishna says, I'm going to weaponize you with a tool, a skill that will allow you to defeat all your enemies and absolve you of all guilt. And he teaches Arjuna how to meditate. So meditation is central to the warrior class. And by warrior, I'm including archetypal masculinity. Like there is a warrior component, mm-hmm, to the core of all of us because we are defined by what we do. Whereas women, mm-hmm, and children are defined by what they are. And it's a, mm, profound difference. And that would be a statement that many current people would find very offensive. Like, oh, mm-hmm, you don't get to say that. But again, psychologically, sociologically, anthropologically, it's irrefutable. Women and children, mm, have always had inherent value for what they are. There's a potential in them to create, right? Either they're going to create adults, mm-hmm, or they're going to create other humans. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Men don't do that. Have to do. We're defined by, mm-hmm, what we do. So weak men who are unable to quote Mickler, Order of Man, to protect, to preside, to provide, that's doing. And so, you know, mm-hmm, that's a warrior, requires the ability to, you know, conquer is too strong of a word, but to certainly be able to defend, to enforce your will upon the world and in order to get a result. That's warrior, yeah, behavior. So anyway, I went on a little tangent. Meditation.
No, I love it.
That's central to masculinity forever. And you didn't learn that 30 years ago. It wasn't available. Mm. Now, you know, every transitioning veteran that I know has at least some sort of awareness or active practice of masculinity, meditation. I can give, you know, a dozen other examples of absolutely transformational things that the internet has provided for this conversation. So we are in the golden age of masculinity. Mm. We are in the age of the creation of more great men than has ever been seen on planet Earth. And they're popping up everywhere. Like, obviously, people talk about, ooh, Joe Rogan, ooh, The Rock, ooh, Jocko, ooh, Peterson. Like, wow. Well, there's a bunch of us who are just rising in their wake. And obviously, there's a bunch of men who are cratering right now, absolutely cratering in addiction, anxiety, depression, you name it. Like, they're done. And, you know, they're either going to get on the rocket or they're going to be done. And that's always been the case. You know, there's always a very small number of men who have able to shake free from the, the ballast of ease and sloth and comfort, because that's the, that is the grounds that create great men throughout history. Athens, that was a very slothful, comfort-based culture that created Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, you know, all the Stoics. Like, that came from an environment where you didn't have to farm and hunt and do brutal back-breaking work. You got a chance to go, let's talk about philosophy and then see how much we can integrate. Boom, you have Aristotle. Yeah. Same thing in the Enlightenment in Europe. Like, there was this magical moment where, ooh, we're out of the medieval dark ages and the plagues, and I don't have to go to war and worry about the church fucking, you know, wrecking me and burning me. So all of a sudden you see these great men coming from the Enlightenment. Same thing with the founding fathers of America. And we have that same environment now. We have endless clean water coming out of holes in the wall. Nobody's worried about, nobody's coming to attack America. Like, we're safe,
right?
We're slothful. We have endless amounts of time and information. How much can we integrate? So anyway, so, that's my long story about how exciting masculinity is now and how cool this conversation is to participate in this wave or this movement.
But it's like, you said something incredibly interesting, is that, like, we're in this kind of slothful environment, which has kind of been a detriment when we look historically to society as far as producing strong cultures and strong men. But on the flip side of that, we have more access to information, which helps us to become more enlightened about who we are, where we come from, and how we can be better men. And so my question to you is, are you looking at those two contradicting points and being like, man, I'm fearful about masculinity moving forward? Or are you like, there is, like, what are you thinking of that? I don't even know. Like, I'm like trying to picture that.
I guess personally, the more I go public with my belief systems or my, you know, my core understanding of masculinity, the more obviously I'm swimming upstream against the collective mass of virtueless, honorless men. Mm-hmm. And because that's what sloth and comfort does to every organism. Every organism is going to take the easy route. That is mm-hmm. built into the system of efficiency. Nobody wants to do hard shit. Mm-hmm. Of course not. You don't. I mean, why would you ever choose to do hard shit? Well, you do that because that's consciousness. I mean, that is called becoming an adult, is that you recognize that it may not be hard now, but it's going to be hard at some point. So you take certain steps to be able to prepare, weaponize yourself. If you eat all the elk right now, there's no elk tomorrow, because you might not get an elk tomorrow. Men know that. So you go, I'm not going to eat all the elk. And by the way, we should probably put out the thorn walls because there's tigers, right? Like, that's what men do, is that we know that there's something in the future. Other animals don't, right? I spent time in Africa, you know, and when the lions are not hungry, the zebras graze right next to them, right fucking next to them. And then the young lions, well, they'll go over and kind of play with the zebras or the foxes, you know, it's like a little play game. And then all of a sudden, like around dusk, you hear, and all of a sudden, like, your hair goes up, and the guide's like, okay, we get back in the truck now. And the zebras go move off. They're like, all right, shit's hunting right now. You know it.
Yeah.
And so what's the difference? Like, if the zebras could see the future, if they could see tonight, they would handle that shit, right? You'd get 100 zebra boys together and they would just go stomp the shit out of those fucking lions. All right, no more lions. There we go. But they don't have the ability to do that because they don't have that. We don't have consciousness. Like, that's meditation. Mm. Is it elevates you into this awareness of, I am not just the product of my senses and this monkey brain. And it allows us to unlock decision making. And that's the you could call it. And hey, in biblically, that's called free will. It's divine. Mm. It's unique. And it takes a lot to claim that free will. If you're just stuck on this, like if you're taking a shit with this in your hand, I challenge anybody watching, and you're like having a 45 minute shit, like, come on.
Yeah.
You just sacrificed your free will. And
yeah,
which means you're an animal. You are now a base original sin animal. And that's the majority of men as I move through the world. And the more I am public about some of those things, obviously the more blowback there is, right? From the collective consciousness of our society. And I always remember, kind of one of the axioms of when you're playing video games and you get lost, you get turned around in some level. You know you're going the right way when you find new enemies. Oh, there they are. There's the enemies. Oh. Finally, I'm in a new level. So that's life. And the fact that there are certain, like when Peterson got his haters, he found his way. Mm-hmm. And that is true. Same thing with Rogan. Same thing with the founding fathers of America. Like, you know what? You know the fucking balls that it took to sign your name to that declaration?
It was a death sentence.
Yeah. All right, there you go. Like, I just called down the wrath of the boss, you know, the level boss, the ultimate villain. And you just like, yes, it's time. So, you know, I'm not playing at that level, but at least I'm acknowledging that there are enemies. That's too strong of a word. They're out of people who are out of alignment of the way that I see the world.
Yeah. But you got a lot of strong men that stand shoulder to shoulder with you following you, and you're paving the path with them.
I couldn't do it.
You're helping
guide them. Couldn't do it. Yeah. Like, if I didn't see Jordan Peterson out there getting the shit kicked out of him in the arena, like if that man didn't exist, there are a lot of us that would not be owning just this common sense applied stoicism that is like, duh. And there's a, you know, I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those men who are on that journey, which is empowering. And they're the ones that are making a difference, and they're the ones that are doing the work. And so
it's powerful. That is where we are. And I think it's powerful that men like you are standing up, because you're invigorating another group of men, and you're one that leads to hundreds, and then those hundreds lead to thousands, and those thousands lead to millions. And like, it's that, you know, culminating effect. But one of the other questions I wanted to get to ask you, because it's very intriguing to me, is that when you came up during the time of kind of like that first men's movement, like the 80s, really, because Robert Bly was probably one of the original guys, right? Like, that was coming up for like the men's movement. He was a poet, my favorite, actually. I love Robert. Most people don't even talk about Robert Bly in the men's space. And I actually love that you mentioned him earlier. But when you were coming up, why didn't this strong men's movement of balance, right? Like the balanced warrior, why didn't that take?
Because number one, it wasn't balanced, and it wasn't warrior. Mm. It was men escaping their duties. It was the Burning Man of my generation. Like, I don't like having to get up every morning and have to go to work. And I don't want to do these hard things of fixing my addictions and my marriage and leveling up my kids when it's not fun. So, you know, and it was the product of the 60s. Like in the 60s, we rejected the savagery, and Bly uses that word. An adolescent wild man is a savage. And we have our, you know, what version of masculinity for a long time, because we're uninitiated, is that we are to claim any sort of masculinity, you become a savage, a bully, you know, this thuggish, weaponized, you know, just ape. And so in the 60s was like, we're rejecting masculinity as a whole. It's like saying, well, I didn't like that cop who did that horrible thing, so defund the police. Tear down the institutions because there's some bad eggs in there. Like, wreck it all. It's like, no. Don't wreck it all. Like, those institutions are holding up this amazing thing that you have, drinking water. That's why we're here. And that, you know, nobody's stealing shit from your house all the time because they're bigger than you are. Like, this is a magical time, and you take it for granted. So and we did that in the 60s with masculinity, of that's bad in general, in the same way we rejected, I don't know, marriage, faith, there, all these pillars of society, absolute pillars of society. And the 60s just yanked them all out. And of course it cratered. I mean, like, duh. Because you need to replace those pillars with something else. And that's part of how society should work, of going, hey, that pillar is broken. There's some racism in that, in police. Let's fix it. And then, you know, upgrade the pillar. Same thing with money and politics. Same thing with, you know, the medical industry, like everything else. Like, don't just remove it, fix it, upgrade it, elevate it, transform it. And so the 60s was the beginning of the hyper feminization of men. And so that led to, you know, the pendulum backlash in the bonkers 80s, where it was like, just, you know, now, you know, that, because people from the 60s are now adults in the 80s, and they're having families, and they're like, that sucked. That didn't work at all. So obviously the only thing in life is make as much as you can. Like, that's the game. Wolf of Wall Street. That's the 80s. So there were a bunch of guys who are like, I'm not winning at this game of make as much as you can. I'm losing. So I'm going to go find some sort of a cosplay, you know, escape from this competition that I'm failing at. And so they went off and put on, you know, Native American headdresses, and they went off in the woods, and they got naked, and, you know, we drummed, what it should have been was a legitimate vision quest to go find the totem animal of our generation, right? Or it should have been the quest of the knights to bring back the elixir in the Holy Grail. That the quest was not the point. The quest is kind of the fun part of the story, because there's adventures, and the point of the quest is to bring the elixir back to the kingdom and heal the king so that the kingdom is revitalized. And Joseph Campbell says about the hero's journey that we are not on this quest to save the world, but to save ourselves. But in doing so, we end up saving the world, because the return of vital men vitalize. And so, yes, the quest is revitalizing, but it's only valuable if you bring it back. And my point is, we didn't bring it back.
Yeah.
And wow. Because the mechanics didn't get it. Mechanics didn't get to go take a week off and go drum in the woods. And the cops didn't either. They weren't even invited. And the poor veterans didn't even know there was a men's movement. So the vitality never got back to traditional masculinity. And the same thing happened in this current men's movement. And I was like, oh, fuck no. It's not going to go down like that. And so, and that wasn't just me. You can also look at, you know, Ryan Mickler, Order of Man. You can look at a bunch of other guys that are like, no, this is not their escapist cosplay men's movement. This is the reclamation of a healthy masculinity. And this is all men are invited, all men. So, bring the cops, bring the veterans, bring the mechanics, bring the school teachers. Like this is a movement. It's not an escape, right? Mm-hmm. This is not a retreat. Yeah. This is an advance. And the internet's a big part of that, because that's an important thing. And I've got a lot of friends, hey, Joshua Winter, I love you, man. But Burning Man is that. Burning Man is a fucking escape. And and we disagree. We fight about that in a healthy manner. But part of me is going like, all that energy, all that creativity, all that money and time and genius. Like, what if that went back in your communities and your families and your So anyway, there are hyper masculine retreats, and hey, we just did one called the Tactical Retreat in, and we had a lot of weapons work and tactical stuff. But there was a lot of heart-based things as well. Like we all cried, we all wrote letters of forgiveness to ourselves and our dads and all that stuff. So, but there are, men who are pretending to be Navy SEALs and they're escaping on the right.
Yeah.
And there are also a bunch of Burning Man, proto shamans escaping on the left. So we're still doing it. It's still there. But what's really cool is both of those extremes, I can own, I'm a theatrical bombastic dude too. So I've been on the extremes as well. But the cool part about it is the internet has created the dynamic with men's work that is the same thing that the UFC did to martial arts. And what the UFC did was it silenced that 10,000 year old conversation or debate about what's best.
Yeah.
It's now answered. It's irrefutable and it's constantly changing and evolving, but there is only one combat form and it's called MMA. And it's different every year because it's endlessly evolving. But if you're signing up for a Shotokan class, you're not signing up for a combat class, a self-defense class. You're signing up for a martial art. That it is it's what called punctuated equilibrium in evolutionary biology. It's like there is a moments in history where things just explode into variation and then it's decided. All the other branches die off because they were not effective. And the one new one that was adaptable to the new environment is the one that is the new species. And so the UFC did that. It closed the doors of 10,000 dojos around the world. Gung, 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 gung. Mm-hmm. There is no Taekwondo. There is no Shotokan. There is no Kenpo. Those are archaic forms. There's only Jiu-Jitsu, MMA. So the men's work conversation is you can do all sorts of kooky shit. Like you can carry logs down the river and you can do eye gazing and you can try all sorts of crazy stuff, but does it work? Is it effective? Our work is evidence of our efficacy. And I'll say that again for you guys watching. The outcomes or the product of your work is evidence of your efficacy, which means, are you making more money? Is your practice or philosophy getting you more sex? Are you happier? Is your career more fulfilling? Those are the measures of, are our practices working? And what's so cool about the men's work space is everybody's watching each other and they're seeing what's working. And so the things that are collapsing into this one men's work movement, and we're all starting to look real similar, which is cool, is breath work, meditation, sobriety, ice baths, fighting, weightlifting. Like, oh, all of a sudden, all these different fringe belief systems are like, like, are you on the way? Are you living the way? And we're not there yet, but it's super exciting. Like, we're seeing a bunch of enlightened savages coming back into the bad word, because I just talked about how bad wild men. We're seeing a bunch of enlightened, powerful, wild men re-entering the human space. And there are Jedis being born right now.
Yeah.
Jedis who are going to be, the best fighters that the world has ever seen, making more money, being more enlightened, changing the world. And then how exciting is that? How cool is that?
It's incredibly, it's so exciting. Yeah. What's really funny is, I run my retreats and I call it the Wild Man Experience. And the reason why was because of Robert Bly's book, Iron John. That's what I call it, because it's getting back in touch with that wild man that we all have inside of us. Mm-hmm. But to your point, that we're seeing a collection of men who are raising the vibration of masculinity because they're warriors, they're poets, they're lovers, they're balanced human beings, and they're bringing that back not only to the other men, like you said, we're finally, I feel like, bringing the elixir back. I feel like the tough men, the alphas, have started to go on this journey, and then they said, whoa, there is a balanced approach here that we've seen throughout history, but nobody's paid attention to. You look at the Spartans, Agogi, you look at the samurai. These were balanced warriors that we long forgot how they actually lived. And we failed to bring that back to society, but you're seeing it now, which, like you said, this is exciting times for masculinity, for the men's movement. This is the next, I'm excited to see the next generation of boys that are coming up from these men right now, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, so what's one of the biggest things right now that's exciting you that men have started to bring into the space, aside from like meditation, but that men are now bringing the space? What is it that you're like, finally, like, this is being honored?
The big one for men, and this is probably the primary lever of reclaiming masculinity of all sorts, not just masculinity, consciousness, claiming free will, whatever you want to, like, this is not just a simple decision of, well, I'm going to be different. I'm going to, change my story. You don't get to change your story arbitrarily. That's called spiritual bypass. We change our story by repetitive new actions that drive different results that over time nibble away at this, fortress of our old belief systems. And it takes a long time to do this, that process is the process of initiation. It's how you go from an adolescent with that old paradigm defining operating system to a mature psychological state, which is an adult, either man or woman. Mm-hmm. Women tend to self-initiate, and there are a lot of different studies about this, of menstruation and the way that women process through into adulthood easier and quicker. Men are 8 years behind developmentally on an emotional level than women. We're dumb, and I'll fully own that. Like, my, and part of it is my,
I'll
child
that.
yeah, my childhood, my I have been retarded. I am retarded in a lot of ways. And we're not allowed to say that word anymore. My development has been retarded. I like to sneak it in. I just said retard on your podcast. I just said retard.
I love it. And you know what? So they say retard your engine on signs in Pennsylvania. So people that get all flipped yes. out about that. It's a freaking.
You can't say that.
It's a scientific term. Yeah. It's literally on signs in Pennsylvania.
I'm a little bitter that we lost retard, but I have been retarded. And the reason why I am retarded is that I have been uninitiated. I'm an uninitiated man who I still have this flywheel of adolescent behavior that drives certain belief systems that I get to, play video games, or I get to watch porn, or I get to do certain things because I want that immediate gratification. I want external validation. I want all these adolescent things that children want, boys. Now, that story, doesn't get me what I want, and it doesn't get society what it needs. I need to operate in my full masculine power, which means I don't necessarily need the external validation of people thinking I'm cool, because I need that heightened currency of kingdom. What I'm doing for the world is more important than the external validation of, like, there are a lot of people who don't like my message and they don't like the way I move through the world. And I have to be okay with that. Like, I have to, if I cave and, to kind of, I guess, some of the real dark woke ideology of defund the police, like, no, I have people in, and I live, of course, in Venice Beach, California. And I have defend the blue line on my truck. Mm-hmm. I have people flipping me off on the street. Well-groomed white people in Teslas have screamed, fuck the police, at me out their window of their Tesla. And I'm like, what? If I remove that from my expression, so I would avoid their shame or their condemnation. Mm-hmm. And that's adolescent. And I refuse. As a free man, I refuse to compromise what I know is what I believe is right. And I'm willing to do that because I think that there's something important in the future. And that's so that's an act of claiming my maturity. In the same way that getting up early or turning the shower to cold or all those things are initiation rituals. I'm reclaiming the discipline of surrendering that adolescent story in order to claim this new story. The adolescent story never goes away. It's still there. And it will be there forever. So there's a constant recommitment to that. In Iron John, this is the moment where the prince goes to the garden, right? Mm-hmm. He leaves the kitchen and the ash work of his adolescent story, which is his wound, right? He's healing his wound, which is the first day at the sacred spring where he's bleeding into the water. So that is healed in the ashes phase, which is the abyss. And then you go to the garden, and this is when you start claiming your new story. And the garden is a really important metaphor because it's a walled garden. And the walled garden is built by and maintained by our discipline. This is how we keep all those distractions and judgments outside so we can do the work we need to do in the garden, right? Mm-hmm. We need to keep doing that work, which is healing and vitality and love and... And then, of course, you know, there is the next phase in Iron John where you have to go claim your kingdom. And so there is a sequential journey for men. And a lot of men want to spiritually bypass all that work. They don't want to do ashes. They don't want to do gardening work. They want to go right to, I want my war horse and I want to claim this kingdom and be a life coach. I'm like, oh, okay, good luck, shaman. Like, you know, you're just went right back to the beginning. You're right back at the sacred spring failing. So you got to do the ashes work. You got to do the garden work. And then, you know, and if you haven't read Iron John, you're probably like, this dude is crazy. But read Iron John, gentlemen, read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And really what, just to put a little closure for, because I think a lot of men watching the show have read Iron John, is the prince, when he decides to go to war, he is re-entering the arena, right? He's no longer just doing the internal work. He's now doing the external. He is engaging with the big questions. And Peterson did this, and Rogan did this. And like, this is, at some point you have to go and say, I'm willing to sacrifice self for service. And that's a big deal. Now, you can't do that without the wild man. And you'll, and in that book, you know, the non-allies, the other men who are threatened by the prince and his golden hair, well, they leave him that shitty three-legged horse, which means, you know, it's a metaphor for, we all have one of our masculine archetypes that's funky, right? And it's either your career or your fitness or your relationships or your spiritual practice. There's something that has been your Achilles heel, your character flaw, your entire life. So you go to the woods and you go to the wild man and say, hey, Iron John, this three-legged horse is not getting me to war. I need a war horse. And of course, he provides, but it's not free. Like, the prince had to gain worthiness of the wild man. You don't just call in the wild man without doing the work first, you know, because don't forget, the wild man is the dude that kicked the kid out of the forest because he couldn't handle his shit. He's not ready. He's bleeding all over the place. There's leaves falling into the fucking pond. He's like all self-obsessed. Like, get the fuck out, do your work. So if the prince had not done his work and gone to the woods and said, I want my war horse, Iron John would have said, well, you still bleeding into the pond? Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, basically saying, are you sober? Are you still jerking off? Yeah. Are you like, have you handled your shit? And if you have not handled your shit, no war horse. So there's you better be ready when you go to the woods and say, I'm ready for the war horse. Because if you haven't done your work, then, you know, right back to ashes for you.
I fucking love that entire monologue right now. That may be my favorite part of the show. That was so good, because you're breaking down this very impactful book as a piece to masculinity that you're seeing in today's society that more men are taking on, but many men are still shying away from, which is that initiation, which is dealing with your shit.
Yeah.
And so you being probably one of the, in my opinion, one of the foremost experts and leaders in initiations out there, where can guys even go to find a proper initiation to find themselves?
Okay. Initiation is not an act. Like, and there are men's groups that say, we're going to initiate you. Initiation is ongoing. Okay. Now, it is a ritual in masculine cultures. Well, every culture has a masculine aspect, where the boy was taken out and had a tooth knocked out and you became a man, or tattoos or whatever. But the process started way before the tattoo, right? The process was started with, let's look at the stars and I'm going to tell you the story of Achilles. The seeds were planted, and then the work continued afterwards. Of, well, this is what it means to be, no, you keep you now you do this. Yeah, you don't get to go back and do that. You do this. And that process is reinforced on an ongoing basis with your allies. And initiation does not exist by yourself, obviously, because you cannot kill the old story of you. You cannot self-kill or self-initiate you. And Viktor Frankl said that the line between good and evil runs through the heart of every man, and who would willingly kill half their own heart? Well, that's initiation. And it takes those three good men to bucket out the lake. More Iron John, to the uninitiated. You need your three good men to bucket out the lake. This is the initiation process, blah, blah, blah. So get yourself a group of aligned men. Now, there are men's groups of every flavor and sort. If you are more, kind of a younger and more expressive and more on the liberal scale, Sacred Sons is awesome. And those boys are killing it out there. They're fucking punching each other in the face in the desert, and they're wearing costumes and they're drumming, and it's like, go boys, do it. They're awesome. Yeah. If you're on the, more on the right side, there's a whole slew of hardcore Christian warrior weaponized, virtue dudes. So, and then a bunch of guys in the middle, right? For the older dudes, every man, great men's group. Lots of good theory, well, kind of grounded in a lot of mytho-poetic stuff. And then, of course, my favorite men's group.
I was going to say, what about K4? What about
in the middle there. We're pretty much in the middle of like, hey, plant medicine's cool, but we also go shoot stuff. Like, okay, we're somewhere in the middle there.
Yep.
Okay.
Right in line with you guys.
Initiation. And we live in an artificially comfortable world. We live in a world where obviously our lifestyles are unhealthy, our food is non-nutritious, our careers are unfulfilling, like blah blah blah. So these artificial times require artificial means. We have to supplement our nutrition. We have to find purpose and meaning outside of many of our careers. There are many artificial things that we have to do. And the initiation process involves being uncomfortable. That's the game. And you didn't used to have to go try to be uncomfortable. Life was fucking uncomfortable. Like go hunt a bison with a spear, bro, and you will know the meaning of discomfort. Wearing a loincloth in the cold of North Dakota.
Yeah.
Like, there you go. Like, that's a man. I don't want to do that. Yeah. In fact, I would die. I would die. So we do have to find things where we're experiencing some discomfort, which is obviously why, and I know there's a lot of physiological evidence for ice baths. I think it's just fucking hard. I think it sucks ass. Yeah. I just think that it means if you can turn the water to cold, you just initiated yourself into a different level, right? You just recommitted to owning your free will as a human. And there's a reason why jiu-jitsu is so popular. There's a reason, because you're dealing with life and death, right? And there isn't anything more profound than that. And, if you've never been to a jiu-jitsu class, prepare to be killed. 10 times a night, you're going to have some fucking dude kill you. And then you get to tap and you're reborn like, wow, you would have just killed me, huh? And they're like, yeah, I didn't. And you're like, oh, that's amazing. Let's do that again. Jiu-jitsu is a great way to not only experience the legitimacy and authenticity and wild man relationship with conflict at its highest level. Mm-hmm. And the reason why jiu-jitsu communities are usually so robust is that you don't get to play like that unless you're an honorable man. I'm not letting some fucking dude choke me unless he's an honorable man. Like, and if you come into a jiu-jitsu school as a adolescent savage, woohoo, you're going to see the professor in the back of the room talk to the gym enforcer and go like this. And that's just the crush this guy and get him out. And yeah. You will be domesticated very quickly if you're that guy.
Yeah.
So
very true.
Yeah. Initiation. Yeah. Take cold showers, go to jiu-jitsu, find a men's group.
I love that. I had a friend actually go to Sheepdog with Tim Kennedy, and he was basically they were doing their mat work and they were doing jiu-jitsu, and he got nailed in the nose by one of the guys. And so he was a former collegiate wrestler, and Tim had two rules, no throwing, and it was something else. And he ended up doing both those, violating Tim's rules. So like you said, Tim pulls him off to the side and for 5 minutes just basically kicks the crap out of him in jiu-jitsu, hand over mouth and closing his nose and just
grinding,
kicking the, face,
kicking the crap out of him. Yeah.
Choking your jaw, 5 minutes. Just rear naked choke on the jaw.
Yep. But that's what it is, man. But I love that. No, brother, this has been such an amazing podcast. I knew this episode was just going to be a jam. It just flew by, and you have such wisdom, brother. I truly am grateful for you. I'm grateful for how you show up in this world, how you're conditioning men. For everybody out there listening, how can they follow you? What do you got going on right now? How can they get in your ecosystem? And we'll link everything in the show notes.
Yeah, a couple things. I have really three, brands or expressions in the world. This is a resiliency program for, a lot of it is warrior based. It's cops and veterans and fire, but there's a lot of, trauma nurses. They see more death than anyone else. Teachers in inner city schools, single parents. These are tough times, and Jordan Peterson says, if you have to fight a dragon, you should go to its lair or it comes to your village. Well, that the trauma dragon that has been kind of in the warrior space, those poor warriors, they're committing a lot of suicide, but thank you for your service. It's in the civilian world now. So Valor is a resiliency program, and we're launching, I think, next month. So there's going to be digital curriculum, going to be a bunch of workbooks and things. So valorresiliency.com. There's my culture and leadership work, which is Wolf Tribe, and that's mywolftribe.com. And I work with organizations all around the world leveling up their operating systems, and I'm sneaking kinship in the back door. That's kind of the work of that. Don't tell anybody, because I'm just making them actually a lot of money. But what I'm really doing is I'm recreating kinship systems. And then, of course, k4men.com. This is my fucking labor of love and favorite thing happening right now with everything we're talking about. We're just wrapping up cohort 8 of a 3-month rite of passage. And this is kind of the introductory, it's an initiation process where men go through 3 months, once a week. It's all online. You have accountability groups. And the next rite of passage starts September 15th. And it's capped at 120 guys. So jump in if you are called to adventure. And and that's all the good stuff. So, Philip Folsom on Instagram. Yeah. Not on there a lot, but sometimes.
Yeah. And then you got your website as well. It's got all this stuff, and we'll link that. And I couldn't think of two better men to subscribe to and follow and join in their community than K4 with you and Joshua Winter. Just amazing human beings. So truly, truly grateful for you, brother. Your last question before I let you hop off and get to that really warm Venice weather right now. Your last question is, what does the art of masculinity mean to you?
The art of masculinity is constantly recommitting to growth, because without strength, you cannot serve. And service guides growth, but growth powers service. And I think that encapsulates masculinity, is we have to be strong. We have to be able to protect, provide, preside. We have to be able to impact and elevate and protect the world. But we also have to make sure that we're guiding and we're navigating that process so that we don't become savage, right? And we keep, stay wild, keep wild, man.
I love that. Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. And to everybody listening, as always, remember to drop the ego and stay humble. Till next time. Mm-hmm.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.